sure we have all of our devices here. My name is Ann Gardner, and I am the presiding judge of this panel for this purpose. And welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Our other two judges on the panel are, Judge Gabriel, Lee Gabriel to my right, and Judge Bonnie Sutter to my left. And so we'll be your panel this afternoon. And we have one previous oral argument with a different panel, and this one, and that's it for the afternoon. The rest of our cases are being submitted on briefs that will be submitted today. So would you go ahead and call the case, please?
The court will now call Jerry Don Snodgrass Jr. versus the state of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Stuart B. Neal will argue for the appellant. Ms. Megan Shalafu will argue for the state.
All right, are the lawyers ready?
Thank you.
We proceed. Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Stuart Neal. I'm from Granbury. It's with great pleasure that I'm here today to represent my client, Jerry Don Snodgrass, Jr. And, Your Honors, this case comes to you on an appeal from a state jail felony probation revocation, which happened in the 355th District Court, and the subsequent sentencing proceeding that resulted in what we believe to be an illogical and an illegal outcome, in contrary to the holdings of the Court of Criminal Appeals. It's our argument that by refusing to grant Mr. Snodgrass the over one year of back time that he had previously served in the county jail upon his probation revocation, that the trial court essentially ordered Mr. Snodgrass to serve a sentence that was in actuality double what had been handed down by the jury. I think it would be helpful.
But it didn't exceed the total amount that would have been provided for had he gotten a sentence to the what was within the maximum range of punishment.
That is correct. The original sentence held by the jury was 12 months on state jail time.
He could have gotten 24?
From the jury. That's correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. However, upon revocation, because the jury had handed down the 12-month sentence, that capped the time on the revocation at a maximum of 12. And on revocation, at the urging of the state, the judge sentenced him to 11 months and asked the judge at that point in time to not grant him the over year of time he'd already served in the county jail as back time. Now, I think as a little bit of background, it's important to understand that Mr. Snodgrass was first arrested on this offense in February of 2014. He did make bond, however, and 4 months later, in June of 14, he was rearrested, we assume, on a capious warrant of some type. At that point, the trial court did determine him to be indigent. He remained indigent through the entire proceedings of the trial court and remains indigent to this day. In January of 2015, he did file a waiver of probation. This is important because in state jail, when you don't have any prior convictions for felonies, your first state jail offense, if it's possession of a controlled substance like this one was, the code says is mandatory probation. Mr. Snodgrass indicated to the trial court on January 26th of 2015 he had no desire for probation. He filed a written waiver that was accepted by the court and was signed by the trial court on that same day. However, Mr. Snodgrass's case did not proceed to trial until June of 2015. He remained incarcerated the entire length of time that he was waiting and pending trial. And on June 8th of 2015, Mr. Snodgrass elected with his court-appointed attorney to plead guilty to the offense of possession of a controlled substance and to proceed with a jury trial on the punishment phase only. That same day, the jury did return a verdict of 12 months in the state jail. The trial court suspended that sentence, placed Mr. Snodgrass on probation at that point in time, despite the waiver that had been accepted in January, and then sentenced as a condition of probation Mr. Snodgrass to serve in the Substance Abuse Felony Punishment Facility Program. That's also known as SAFE-P. Mr. Snodgrass did not cooperate with the SAFE-P, not too unsurprising considering he had said from the beginning he did not want probation. A motion to revoke was filed. A hearing was held on September 22nd, 2015, And at that point in time, he was sentenced to 11 months in state jail. Now, in our brief, we raised three issues. The first issue is, and I believe it's undisputed by the state, the current case law out of the Court of Criminal Appeals is that a defendant must be awarded his time credit, his back time credit, if the time he's already served in jail plus the sentence going forward would exceed the statutory maximum in the penal code. And also if the defendant is indigent. There's no doubt, and I don't think there's any dispute, that throughout the proceedings, Mr. Snodgrass was indigent in this case. So that, I'm not sure that's an issue. However, in section 12.35 of the Texas Penal Code, we know that the maximum range of punishment for a state jail felony offense is 24 months. I believe the code reads 2 years. You'll also notice, though, that in that same section, the code talks about the minimum in a matter of days. It doesn't say 6 months. It says 180 days. We believe, and it is our argument, that the time calculation that should be used in these types of situations should be calculated in days, not months or years.
But with the state's concession that he should have been credited for the time awaiting the revocation hearing, even if you use days, that brings it down below the maximum, doesn't it?
It would, because I believe that time is 34 days.
So, therefore, that kind of defeats your argument, doesn't it?
I disagree. And the reason I disagree is because at the point in time that Mr. Snodgrass was sentenced, he had already served 393 days in jail. He was then sentenced to an additional 333 days. In jail. And the case law says clearly, if those two numbers add up to larger than the statutory maximum, which in this case 24 months would be 720 days, if those two numbers, the numbers he's already served plus the number that he would be required to serve, add up to more than the maximum, he's entitled to his back time credit. The cases do not talk about any concessions for time that he may have served awaiting revocation. They speak straight to the numbers. Now, it's important.
Now, is the statute, you said you think it says 2 years, not 24 months?
I believe it does.
Okay, and 2 years would be 730 days, would it not?
No, that's incorrect. For the purposes of TDC, and by TDC I mean the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Institutional Division, it's well known that they look at every single month as having 30 days.
Is that in the record, or aren't you asking us to consider something you consider to be well known but that's not in the record?
No, it is in the record. It's actually, I don't know that it's in the, I'm asking you to consider what's well known throughout the criminal justice community. And we justify that in two reasons. One, we cited in the appendix to the brief two different appendixes. The first was an article from a well-known parole attorney from Austin.
But we can't consider things that you just attached to your brief. It's not in the appellate record, and I'm sure you know that.
I do think that you can consider the second, if you want to disregard the first appendix, and if that's what you choose to do, then that'll be fine. I do think that you can consider the fact that TDC itself shows on its records that the 11-month sentence equals 330 days. It does not equal any larger than that.
But
aren't
there cases from the Court of Criminal Appeals that calculate the years in terms of 365 days?
I don't believe they don't speak to the specific numbers themselves. And so it's my argument that I believe this court should look at the numbers, not necessarily the months.
So you're saying that you don't believe there's any Court of Criminal Appeals case that calculates the number of years served by multiplying 365 by the number of years?
In the liturgy from the Court of Criminal Appeals, I am not prepared to say that there has never, ever been a holding from the Court of Criminal Appeals that says that. What I am prepared to say is that under Ex Parte Bates, the seminal case in this area, that holding says that if the number of the back time plus even if it's not a maximum sentence, if the number of the back time plus the number of the front time is more than the maximum, then the gentleman is entitled to his back time.
Right, but if you calculate it based on 365 days out of the year, mathematically that would be 730, would it not?
I have to admit, I'm not super sharp at math. I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
However, we believe that TDC, for TDC purposes, they use 30 days in each month. Our second argument, our second issue that we raise in the brief is the fact that Mr. Snodgrass had attempted to waive his probation at the outset. We are prepared at this point to concede that that issue may not be timely before the court. However, at the same time, we do urge and we do believe that it's a shame, and we would ask the court to consider that Mr. Snodgrass should not necessarily be punished just because he may not have had an attorney that knew to raise that issue at that time. But under the progeny of manual cited by the state, we are prepared at this point to concede that that issue and that issue alone may not be timely before the court.
Talking about issue number two?
That is issue number two.
But it should have been raised at the time of what?
Under the manual and its progeny, there are some cases that say the issue of whether about probation, whether you should be put on probation, should have been raised within 30 days of the probation order being signed.
Okay, I'm sorry. You said manual. I was thinking something else. Manual versus state. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. And I apologize for that. That's cited in the state's brief. I believe that case is probably precedential here as far as that holding, so we are prepared to concede that argument. As far as our third point, we would argue to the court that, in our opinion, we believe that the holding or the statute, Texas Code of Criminal Procedure 4212, Section 15H2, which is the section relied upon by the trial court and by the judge and by the district attorney in urging the withdrawal of back time, we believe that violates Mr. Snodgrass's constitutional due process. And the reason we base this argument, the reason we bring this argument, is because ultimately what we're looking at here is we have a gentleman that chose to proceed to a jury trial in a matter. And that was his right to do that. He went through the jury trial. The jury awarded him 12 months. He thought at that point in time he was going to serve 12 months in jail. Traditionally, Code of Criminal Procedure Article 42.03 says in all criminal cases, you are entitled to your back time, time that you've already served in county jail. You're accredited that going forward. However, in a state jail probation revocation situation, under 4212 15H2, the trial judge is somehow, from a gift of the legislature, I suppose, granted the ability to withdraw that back time on a state jail felony revocation. So Mr. Snodgrass went to trial thinking he'd already served over a year in jail. He received a verdict from the jury that was a year in jail. He expected to go home. Instead, he was sent to this safe P unit and then revoked, and then come to find out he has to now serve another year in jail.
Did you raise this constitutional challenge in the trial court?
I believe he objected in the trial court. And he certainly objected in the MTR hearing. I don't know if he objected at the time of trial, but he objected that his arguments at the time of trial were preserved because he had filed the waiver of probation saying, I don't want to be on probation. When he got to the MTR, they certainly objected to the issues of him not getting his back time credit at that point.
But as a constitutional challenge, or just objected that it didn't follow the Code of Criminal Procedure?
As I recall the record, I believe it was a global objection to his not getting his back time. I do not recall in the record a specific challenge under Amendment 8 and Article Texas Constitution Article 1, Section 9.
And in reading your issue on your constitutional challenge, I was unsure exactly what you were raising, because you said that you argued that the statute is unconstitutional in its entirety through its application. So is this a facial challenge or an as-applied challenge?
We believe that it is an as-applied challenge, similar to the Jimerson case out of the Texarkana Court of Appeals. In the Jimerson case cited in the brief, you'll remember that the Court of Appeals held the statute 4212-15H2 unconstitutional as applied to the withdrawal of back time prior to an MTR, a motion to revoke proceeding.
But Jimerson got the maximum, did he not?
I believe so, yes. But the Bates case says that doesn't matter anymore, as long as the two numbers add up. That's a distinguishing factor. However, the difference is we believe that this statute could possibly have the chilling effect on jury trials. What's the point of having a jury trial if the judge who doesn't like the outcome can just put you on probation, revoke you, and not give you any back time? You essentially serve 2 years on a sentence where you should have served one. And that's we argue that that's not fair. It doesn't pass the smell test. We understand that sometimes people who engage in criminal activity have to suffer the natural consequences of their actions. But that's what juries are for. We allow the juries to hear the facts. We allow them to make a decision. That's what they did in this case.
But isn't that conflating the issue that you've already conceded you can't raise at this point in time?
I don't think so, because what we're talking about now is the jury in that case thought this man was going to serve 12 months in jail. This man's now served almost, if he serves his full sentence, will serve 24 months in jail, double the time that the jury had sentenced him. And how can that be due process when in reality we have juries for a reason? If the jury wanted him to serve 24 months, they would have sentenced him to 24 months. And that's not what they did. They sentenced him to 12. It was the unilateral action of the trial judge with the help of the district attorney who suggested this in the record that he served the full 24 months. We believe that that violates due process, and that's our argument. If we have any more questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'd like to first talk about something the appellant addressed about over a year of back time or time served credit. And I think where the appellant and the state disagree is that the time that Mr. Snodgrass served prior to his revocation, I think, has to be divided into three time periods. The time he spent in the county jail prior to his jury trial, and the time he spent in the county jail after being placed on probation and sent to the safe P unit, and then the third period being the time that he was discharged from safe P and sent back to the county jail to await the revocation hearing. Mr. Snodgrass complains that the trial court erred in denying any credit for his time served. And as I put in the state's brief and as Mr. Neal talked about, I believe Mr. Snodgrass is entitled to the time credit that he served in the county jail awaiting the revocation hearing. And I believe that was from August 20th of 2015 to September 22nd of 2015. But I want to talk about the time that Mr. Snodgrass served in the county jail prior to his jury trial. And those dates are February 13th through the 14th of 2014, and then June 16, 2014 until June 8th of 2015, which by my calculations is 11 months and 26 days. And he was sentenced to 11 months by the trial court. And we've talked about how the maximum punishment for a state jail felony offense is 24 months. So by my calculation, if you add 11 months plus 11 months and 26 days, you get less than 24 months. And the reason all of that is important is because under the Code of Criminal Procedure, the trial judge has discretion to award credit for time served in the county jail in a state jail felony community supervision revocation case. But the exception to that discretion comes from two cases, Ex parte Harris and Ex parte Bates out of the Court of Criminal Appeals. And those two cases hold that the Equal Protection Clause provides an exception to the judge's discretion in that if the punishment assessed is the maximum allowed under the statute, or if you add the time confined prior to trial to the actual punishment assessed, and that number is greater than the maximum allowed under the statute, then equal protection requires that that defendant be credited with his time served prior to trial. And so I think if we follow Ex parte Bates, Mr. Snodgrass does not have over a year of time served credit. He has 11 months and 26 days. And when added to the 11 months that he was actually assessed, he was sentenced to less than the statutory maximum. So the exception under the Equal Protection Clause does not apply to his case. And so I do not think the trial court erred in denying him credit for that time served prior to trial. Now, he did serve a short period of time in the county jail while he awaited transfer to the Safe P unit, and then he also served a few days at the Safe P unit before he was unsuccessfully discharged. And the Court of Criminal Appeals has made clear that that is discretionary for the trial court to decide whether to grant credit for that time served. So it was not error for the trial court in this case to deny that credit. And then, as I've talked about, I believe that Mr. Snodgrass is entitled for the time served credit that he spent after he was discharged from Safe P awaiting the revocation hearing. As to the constitutional argument that the Code of Criminal Procedure is unconstitutional to give the trial court discretion to grant or deny this time served credit, I would just say that the case law repeatedly holds that there is no general constitutional right to credit for time served. The only exception that I have been able to find is the one I just talked about under the Equal Protection Clause. And so I think I have not been able to find a case that says outside of this equal protection argument that there is some other constitutional right to credit for time served. And for that reason, I would ask that this court deny the appellant's third point of error and uphold the trial court's decision. As to appellant's second point of error, I think he has conceded that point has been waived, that he can no longer complain about being placed on community supervision in the first place. And so if the court has no questions, I won't address that point of error. But I would just conclude by asking the court to affirm the trial court's decision, except as it relates to that short period of time regarding the revocation hearing from August 20th of 2015, when the state filed the motion to revoke, until September 22nd of 2015, when the hearing on the motion to revoke was held.
So if we agree with you, what is the appropriate ruling from this court to reform the judgment?
I believe so. Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Briefly, Ron.
Just briefly, in our time calculations that we use for the argument number one, we believe that Mr. Snodgrass had 393 days served prior to the revocation hearing. We break that out at 359 days pretrial plus the 34 days awaiting, after the return from Safe P, awaiting the revocation hearing. We don't include any numbers of the time that he waited in the county jail, some 2 months, waiting post the sentencing from the jury, waiting for Safe P. But then the 393 is our calculation on those days, and then we believe that the post-revocation is 330 days. When you add those numbers together, it's 723, and we would urge the court to believe that a 24-month sentence for TDC purposes is 720. I think to the constitutional argument briefly, we say that sometimes in criminal law, it just has to pass the smell test, right? And by that I mean, when a jury sentences somebody to 12 months, that should be the sentence handed down by the jury, or that should be the sentence a person serves. You pick a jury, you ask these six people to hear the, or 12 people to hear the evidence, and to make a decision. That's what they do. It doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem constitutional for a judge then to unilaterally disregard that, especially when the two statutes come in conflict. And I'm aware of the holdings of this court and other courts that say because 4212.15H2 is more specific that it applies to state jail revocations. I understand that. And I respect that holding. The difference is, what's the point of having a jury trial if the jury's verdict doesn't matter? And I just ask you, how would you feel if your family member was sentenced by a jury and then ended up serving an actual time double what the jury had said? It could have a chilling effect on jury trials. Why would we even have jury trials if they say in criminal law everything's negotiable? What would prevent the state from negotiating with the defense? I won't urge the judge on a potential revocation to withhold your back time if you just take this 24-month deal right now. What would prevent the state from taking actions like that? It's not fair. We believe it violates due process. We urge the court to extend the holding from the Texarkana Court of Appeals in Jemerson, which has already held the statute unconstitutional in certain circumstances. We urge you to adopt that holding, to extend it to these situations, and we ask that you give Mr. Snodgrass his back time. Unless you have any further questions, I appreciate the time. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for excellent, well-articulated arguments on a difficult issue and for your briefing. Good briefing. Good work. Your case is submitted, and we will adjourn for the day, and you're released.